presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. We'll call it hour three, although we're 20 minutes in, and I've had some fun extended conversations this morning. Royal Ascot with Kev Humphreys and Brian Lynch with a visit to start the morning. And just now, Eric Hallstrom as Indiana gets started. And also getting started was the Steeplechase community on Saturday after basically having to tread water and keep everything on ice for 3 months. And a very important part of the Steeplechase schedule essentially is, you know, lost for the year. But Middleburg gets it going. It was a big full day of racing. It was streaming, and Joe Clancy had his finger on the pulse the whole time. Joe, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. And I talked a couple different times through the teeth of the pandemic with Bill Gallo, and we're waiting and hoping, and then sure enough, Virginia, the first opportunity, and Middleburg gets things rebooted, and then a week from Saturday, Gold Cup Day, but boy, it sure looked like everybody was so relieved just to get out there and run their horses.
Yeah, I mean, the work that went into trying to pull that off and actually pulling it off was amazing, really. I mean, there were times when it didn't look like there was going to be any steeplechase racing until the racetracks got going, just based on the health things and the various state regulations and county regulations, and then just the economics of it all. I mean, trying to do steeplechasing without crowds is next door to impossible in America. I mean, there's no betting, there's no other outside source of income. It all counts on either sponsor dollars or ticket sales, and the events are great. They get, 10, 20, 30, some of them get 50,000 people, and it's a wonderful event, and then the money kind of fuels down into purses and things like that. But you take that public aspect away, or the social aspect away, and it makes it really delicate. And to see the people come together, raise some purse money, a couple sponsors stayed in at Middleburg, and then the horsemen obviously responded, which was really cool to see.
How much, before we talk about the racing and, just, big, bulky fields, throughout, and some actually very notable results, but Joe, I mean, what are the hunt meet organizations? I mean, there's more than just the loss of an opportunity for owners, trainers, and riders. A lot of the meets are essentially fundraisers for local charities. And, this is a topic that's the one thing, actually, we've talked about some charitable giving when it comes to the backstretch community and to aftercare, etc. One area, and it's certainly going to be felt at Saratoga, the charitable galas and, the money that is raised at any number of seasons, whether it's a Saratoga, Del Mar, etc., Keeneland, and the same is true for the hunt meets. And I feel terrible that there's not going to be this mechanism to fill some charity coffers.
Yeah, I mean, when you, again, everything's connected, and never has it been more evident than through all this. I mean, when you see the, we think about horses and the very beginnings of it, but then it filters down to jobs and the race meets themselves and the charities that benefit from them and right down the line. I think there's a lot of work being done trying to figure out other sources of revenue, ways to do some of this with all the different things in place, like they've, you know, the social distancing and everything else that everybody else talks about, and the health and safety things. And the one thing they, the race meet seasons are spring and fall, so those fall meets have some time. Hopefully time helps, you know, and you try to draw up a little different scenario, a little different model, like, you know, theoretically spread people out. If you're allowed to have people, spread them out a little bit. If you want to try to bring in sponsors, you know, that live show, live streaming show we did the other day, I think that's an opportunity as we keep trying to perfect the model a little bit. And it's just a new thinking. And I think purses are certainly, we'll see it in the two spring meets. Purses are, you know, decreased just like they are on the flat and everywhere else because the sources of that revenue isn't there. And they're all trying to, I mean, Middleburg ran Saturday, it was the 100th running, you know, so they're all trying to sustain this meet too. Sure, you could probably figure out a way to blow it out of the water and have your purses exactly where they were last year, but you might jeopardize your future next year and years down the road. So I think they've got to rethink a lot of that kind of thing. And it's just amazing how it's all connected to me, and you keep kind of realizing it as you go. Like you touched on, the steeplechase meets, most of them all benefit some kind of charity, like a local hospital or a land preservation group or whatever. Yep. And, you know, they basically just have to rethink that, I think. And, you know, hopefully people want to support causes. I think that's very evident, but you just might have to do it a little differently.
Well, and when you mention, you know, the 100th, you know, the thinking ahead to the situation for Far Hills and you know, being, you know, hopeful that things work out. I mean, Guy Toscalieri has been planning for years for this 100th running of Far Hills. So a similar scenario. Well, we will, you know, continue, obviously, to monitor and report, and let's dive into what went on Saturday, Joe. I was watching your feed as I was, you know, keeping an eye on a lot of the flat racing, and let's start actually with the Temple Guathmi, the highlight of the card, the Grade Three. And boy, the one thing that I thought of Saturday night, looking at the results, was, oh, Jack Fisher picked up where he left off.
Yeah, for sure. Jonathan Sheppard had a triple on the card, and Jack Fisher won a couple, and Leslie Young won one. So you kind of the trainers, even with a few months off, can get their horses ready. That's for sure. And that horse Moscato won the Guathmi. I mean, he's done very little wrong in his steeplechase career. He kind of just hasn't gone one more notch and won a Grade One. He's beaten Grade One horses several times, just like Saturday, and he doesn't look like he's lost a step at all. I mean, just really cool performance. Sat there, let two horses kind of battle on the lead, and then, you know, worked his way into the race and ran by them all, won by 11.5, and it probably could have been a lot more.
Now, Moscato, and there were, you know, the one nice thing about this, a lot of the most familiar names to Jump fans were involved here. Belisarius ends up second for Kate Dalton, and I know I saw where you were plugging some of the owners that were going to be involved, you know, once the entries came out last week. Of course, Gary Barber and partners here, and Iranistan and Surprising Soul and Zanjabil, etc. You know, Scorpiancer ended up bypassing the race, but you know, for the upper level division, Joe, good start to the restart.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, there's a couple more waiting in the wings. We've got a hurdle stake at the Virginia Gold Cup June 27th, and you might see a couple of these from the Guathmi go there. But, you know, Scorpiancer, I think Jack Fisher said he was fine, and, you know, he's owned by the same people as Moscato, so he could wait and run there. Winston C. Is in training and, you know, would be a horse aiming for Saratoga. We saw how good he was there last year, and, you know, where that would be his forte, where some of these other races might not. It'll be interesting to see what people do with horses, because you don't know. You know, just like the schedule was so in doubt this spring, the fall schedule might be a little in doubt too. So you might see Moscato stay in training and go on and run at Saratoga. You know, where in a different world, or in a normal world, I guess, he might take the summer off and point for the big fall races.
Well, when you talk about the divisions and feeding the divisions, certainly Saturday at Middleburg was going to be productive with all the maiden races that were part of the card. And I thought it was particularly notable. Let's work from the 7th back to the 6th and 5th. Zoom Zoom Zoe, the Irish bred that Jonathan sent out with Buttonwood, Jerry Galligan, who had a natural triple here, he wins two maiden specials and a maiden claimer, three in a row. But here's a four-year-old that wins upon debut. Is this a star in the making?
We'll see. Yeah, she did that really easily. And a lot of times the filly mare maiden races can be a little hard to kind of get your head around because, you know, the horses come in from all over the place and they might have different form or different levels of experience and you're just not sure. She obviously came over from Ireland well prepared because she did that really nicely. It'll be interesting to see where she goes next. Opportunities are going to be a little bit limited. Do they go ahead and run her, against boys in an allowance race? Or, the way she did that, it looks like she can handle it for sure. Just fun to see. I mean, to see, again, you don't know. We there's no betting on these races, but we try to pick them and try to be smart. And, you know, she would have been, the barn probably loved her, and they would have told you so. But, again, you're trying to look at paper and trying to figure out who's doing what, and you really had nothing to go on. She had run in an Irish point-to-point, but that was pretty much it. She did that really well. Obviously, she's got to step up and face some winners next time, so we'll see.
I was going to specifically ask you if this race had been in a venue with betting, what you think she would have gone off at.
I have no idea. Knowing how much Jonathan's assistant, Carrie Bryan, likes Zoom Zoom Zoe, you know, she probably would have opened very short because Carrie would have at least taken a little bit of a plunge. And a few of these others might have, too. So, we know Jonathan Shepherd and the team there can get horses ready. So she certainly would have been one of the ones to look at and think about. I mean, the whole field was really, especially the way this year is shaping up, they were pretty much all first-time starters except for one horse. So it was a very kind of wide-open question mark maiden. Connections would have made you pay attention to Zoom Zoom Zoe for sure.
Well, the other maiden special winner that came right ahead of it, Hot Springs. This is an Uncle Mo gelding, a five-year-old, and might be a good opportunity for you to tell us about Jerry Galligan as well, because this was quite a splash.
Yeah, that horse ran really well, and people, flat fans, will recognize his name. He was with Steve Asmussen, and won a grade three on the turf. They paid a lot of money for him as a yearling at Keeneland, and then Arch Kingsley bought him at the Horses in Training sale last year at Keeneland, which at the Keeneland November sale, and as a jump prospect, and he did that really nicely. I mean, a horse, French Light, was in front, and sort of Middleburg can be a trappy kind of course, has a real sort of short final stretch, and the turn, French Light looked like he was going to win. He got a little green coming around the turn, and Hot Springs just kept running and ran him down in the last 50 yards or less, even really. I don't think anybody breeds an Uncle Mo or spends a lot of money at Keeneland on an Uncle Mo yearling thinking they're going to be a hurdle winner, but he's done really well for the new connections with Arch Kingsley and Carrington Holdings for sure. And Gerard Galligan, he won three in a row. He won the two, one that was the first, the Zoom Zoom Zoe was second, and then he won a maiden claimer in the 8th too. So nice day for him and a nice way to start your season.
Well, lonely weekend for your brother Sean's partnership, River D, and it seems like it won't be long before Lonely Weekend graduates over the jumps.
Yeah, he was closing into it too with Hot Springs. The two of them sort of ran by French Light there together at the end, and you know, that he's a nice horse, too. He's got, it's a shame he hadn't broken his maiden yet, but, you know, he's been close enough. He ended last year with a second and then a second again to start this year. And I would think they might take a shot and come back in 2 weeks at the Gold Cup.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, these horses have been kind of treading water, and why not take every opportunity? Well, those were the two maiden specials. Actually, there was a third maiden special I should slip in. Critical Data as well for Richard Valentine and Runny Moore. This one, a Battle of Marengo four-year-old that pretty much, you know, was stalking the pace of 20 years on, and then went on with it, and, you know, won kind of in hand.
That could be a nice horse, too. I mean, his platform last year was good enough. I mean, Richard doesn't run that many flat horses, but you see he was, you know, he was in the Grade 3 at Delaware. He got to be four lengths in the Virginia Derby. I mean, you know, that's a pretty serious horse to then switch to go hurdling. And watching the race unfold, you could see Kieran Norris, you know, had a lot of horse and could have probably gone on at any time, and he was trying to keep him in behind. That division of those maiden races was restricted to four-year-olds only, and they ended up with 10 runners, which is great. It's a good sign of sort of the future ranks of the steeplechase horses.
Well, and that's exactly what the whole, you know, the whole card portended. I mean, this is, Joe, obviously this is a storyline that we're seeing all over the place. I mean, you know, in the industry in general, but you know, it did look like you know, the rest of the year will be, it will be really healthy, and certainly when we get to Saratoga, you know, we're really, you know, 4 weeks away, and Colonial, I imagine, you know, there's going to be some very good jumping over the flat.
Yeah, I mean, there should be plenty of horses, which, nobody wants to do it this way, but having no racing for 2 or 3 months will certainly help the horse inventory, and should also make people think, I mean, a lot of times after a hard spring, especially the steeplechase, the horses will, you know, give them, the trainers and owners will give the horses a break over the summer and, you know, try to come back, but it's basically nobody ran during the spring, so to me, that should make more people think about, you know, the Colonial and Saratoga races that are there. You know, I think theoretically there should be more horses for those races, which is a good thing. And what the steeplechase world is always trying to kind of maximize field size. We know it's an unfamiliar betting product, but you try to put as many horses in there as you can, and we all know that helps everything. So and these races are going to be, you know, these are going to be great indicators. I mean, there's five maidens that got broken Saturday, and, you know, their horses can go on to run in allowance races at Colonial and Saratoga for sure.
By the way, we've got a definitive answer from big-time steeplechase handicapper and participant Tom Herman. Tom says, and Tom's one of the bookmakers on track at a lot of the jump events, and he's one of the few people that wasn't happy with the innovation of Parimutuel at Far Hills. But Tom said he would have opened 5-2. That he would have made Zoom Zoom Zoe 5-2 on his board at the opening.
I think there might have been a line, and it would have gone down considerably.
I love it. Well, and he would have adjusted.
Yeah, exactly.
Joe Clancy with us talking about Middleburg on Saturday, and so good to, you know, to be able to see everybody participate. And there was really a nice spread. You know, yes, you know, Shepherd with three wins and Fisher with two, because later in the card, after the Temple Guathme win, Storm Team actually broke the maiden as well later with Sean McDermott. McDermott actually won the nightcap as well with Invocation for Mark Beecher. But Neil Morris, a winner with a maiden 15, and you mentioned Leslie Andiamo likes that course.
Yeah, he's a fun horse. What a cool horse! He was running at Saratoga, you know, in the Turf Riders and those Grade One hurdle races, and now he's switched to Timber, and you know, he just looks like he could go all day in those races. He doesn't get tired at all. He kind of just keeps galloping, keeps jumping, and he's really tough to handle. And it'll be interesting to see again, coming back in 2 weeks at the Virginia Gold Cup and going farther, whether he can do it again. But he's a neat timber horse to watch.
I love it. And what else? What happened, by the way? The chart is incomplete for the opener. It looks like it was... What happened there in the first?
Well, again, be careful what you wish for, right? We want more exposure. We want live stream television. But the first was a training flat race, and which had some nice horses in it, sort of prepping for things. And Middleburg can be a quirky kind of course. It's sort of wide open, especially at that juncture. And the horses, the leaders decided to go one direction, and the followers, some followed them, and the others, cooler heads prevailed, and they went the right way. So basically, you were supposed to go the way the fly course works there. The first time through, you stay to the inside. The second time through, you go to the outside. And one group went to the outside the first time. So we see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 horses that went off course. So Chief Justice won the thing. I think he was probably going to win it no matter what happened with the other ones, the way he ran. And we should see, you know, we keep kind of waiting for big things for him over hurdles, and you should see him again here shortly.
Excellent. Thank you for the clarification, because I could not I couldn't make out what the hell had happened. Joe,
you weren't alone.
Give us, I went to tune in for the Guathme, which I was excited about, and then when I put the pull up charts, I was like, wait a minute, this is screwy. Joe, some thoughts overall about where we are, and you can cast a wider net for Tom and for Sean and everybody at thisishorseracing.com and the Saratoga Special. How do you see the summer unfolding?
Wow, I mean, it gets a little more clear the closer we get. Unfortunately, we just keep getting closer. So, I think racing is going to keep coming back, you know, step by step and incrementally. And as long as everything stays okay in terms of health and safety, we'll see it. We're still working out our publishing schedule for Saratoga, of course. It doesn't make much sense to kind of, if there's no spectators there, to do business completely as usual. But we're going to publish, and we've started some online publications here. We've done two issues. We've got a preview, Belmont Stakes preview, coming out Saturday, and we're basically going to do the next three Saturdays, which will lead us right to Saratoga's doorstep. And then, Saratoga, for sure, we'll do those online editions. We're still working on whether we can support and whether there's going to be readers we can find for a print edition. So if nothing else, you'll be able to get some semblance of the special online as a PDF, like you always could. But with the print edition, to me, we're still trying to sort it out just based on the expenses, what our projected revenue is going to be, and what the access is going to be for both for people, you know, for spectators, for media, for everybody.
And it is fluid. I mean, it does feel like, you know, we're inching forward toward, you know, the potential for owners first, for licensed, for licensees to attend. And, you know, then from there, you know, we're just kind of watching, you know, the way other, how the other venues are dealing with it. But New York as a whole, during this post, initial months of the pandemic, New York is very steady. And I can tell you, I started, one of the things I mentioned at the start of the show, I mean, the restaurants are opening. They'll be able to have 50% capacity. I said we were at Pennell's on Friday night. Tina and I got to be the first we were the first to be served on Friday night at Pennell's, which is great. And even though there's been a pandemic, I still ordered lasagna, which I've been ordering for 40 years. It's the only thing I order there. Tina had the chicken broccoli penne. They're operating, by the way, at about, I'd say the menu is about, it's about two-thirds complete. There's some things they can't, like there weren't clams. They haven't, their seafood supplier hasn't really, that hasn't been ironed out. So you can't get the full menu at Pennell's, but they'll be happy to see you. Bruce is they were doing takeout, but it was just nice to sit down at a restaurant, Joe.
I'm sure. Yeah, it's been a while. We're here. Yeah,
in, right.
We're in Maryland, but we're just outside of Newark, Delaware, which sort of has a much smaller version of Broadway, like Saratoga, with restaurants and things like that. And yeah, we've been trying to go do our takeout and things, and we have not been to one to sit down yet. But they're just kind of getting the same, kind of taking the same steps: outdoor dining, and working their way up to, hopefully, some semblance of normalcy.
I feel badly. I mean, we referenced how fundraising, problematic with no attendance at the Chase meet. But I also realize, as you were talking about the Saratoga special, it's been such a productive and, frankly, remarkable resource for young aspiring writers and people that seek to participate in the industry. You've created this. You and Sean and Tom have created this fountainhead of young aspiring participants, and I would feel terrible for them if some people probably looking forward to being there for the summer and if there isn't that access, I suppose you can't really have a full complement of staff.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we had a initial group together, and Tom Law is the man who put that together, and he had a couple interviews with people, and we thought we had this is gonna be a good group, and now it's just throwing a big question mark into the whole thing. There's a couple people who are local up there that I think we might utilize again if we can, but yeah, I think everything's different. It's you touched on it. It's so fluid that you can't really make a big plan like that. And we've told a handful of interns, we call them interns, but whatever you want to call them, staff writers, we've told them, look, we can't guarantee you anything. We can't guarantee anything for ourselves. So, if you have other opportunities, by all means, go pursue them. We're still in the business of creating horse racing content people like to read, and if we can still do that and get people to do things remotely or over the phone or however, we're happy to try to do that, and obviously we'll use some people as the summer unfolds.
Well, Joe, I appreciate the update and the recapping of the first of the summer season when it comes to the hunt meet and everything at nationalsteeplechase.com to keep tabs and to look forward a week from Saturday. I mean, it comes right back up, as you mentioned, and Gold Cup Day. And, boy, that really is too bad that for those that have never been to Little Washington, and it's another of the really pleasant visits, on the calendar for the Chase season. And you're right. The racing's great, and having an opportunity for everybody to run and owners, trainers, and riders. But the atmosphere is what makes it's a different story at the racetrack. Yes, the big Saturdays are a little empty right now, but Monday through Friday it's easier, for everybody on the thoroughbred side. But it's not the same if nobody's partying and tailgating and so forth at the Chase events.
Yeah, by definition, steeple chasing is pretty much socially undistanced. I mean, that's the point, right? You're supposed to go there with friends and family and have a tailgate, or go to the sponsor tents, or be there with the kids or whoever. I mean, it's just it's a very different atmosphere. We did that live stream the other day, and I was in my office in Fair Hill, and Megan Connolly, the co-host, or she's the host, I'm the co. She's in a TV studio in Arkansas, and the races are in Virginia, and it felt very disconnected. Yeah. We were thrilled to do it, and it was great, but it felt very disconnected. And then when you would kind of watch the races, especially at Middleburg, they line tailgate tailgate spaces sort of all the way through the stretch and around the turn and up to the last fence, and it's probably not quite a half a mile, but it might be a half a mile of cars, you know. Hmm. It's nothing. It's empty, you know, on Saturday. It was very strange.
Yeah. Well, we're headed in the right direction, and
exactly.
the racetrack jumping will help you know, kind of bridge the gap, and then knock on wood by September, ideally, there'll be the opportunity. Although, you know, they say, you know, the outdoors is better than indoors. We know that, and I don't know why, with masks, even now, Joe, I don't know why you couldn't pull this off, with a low risk, you know?
Yeah, I think they have to rethink the plans a little bit. Those sponsor tents that have hundreds of people in them, you know, probably aren't the way to go. But outdoor tailgating, and maybe people are spread out a little more, you know, it certainly sounds like something you could do by then. You know, you don't necessarily have to sit elbow to elbow to watch a steeplechase race. I mean, there's plenty of room at most of the venues to spread out.
Exactly.
And I think that, it's all new, and it's all open to interpretation. So I think, you know, anything we can do, you know, the sad reality of the spring steeplechase circuit was there were 14 race meets that didn't happen, and it's about $2 million in purse money and all the other contracts and vendors and, you know, employees on the horse side and the event side that didn't, you know, that didn't happen. That's the sad part.
Yep.
You got to figure out a way to, you know, to bring back some of that, I think, has got to be the goal. And then, you know, business as usual can wait. You know, I think that's got to be down the road someday.
Joe Clancy, everybody, and you can look forward to Andy turning things over to Joe for Talking Horses this summer, right? Is that
hopefully we can sit next to each other?
Please tell me.
Hopefully, I'm not on the phone.
Exactly. Good point. Follow Joe if you aren't already. Follow Joe Clancy, JoeClancy65 on Twitter, and thisishorseracing.com. Not just steeplechase. They started out as the Steeplechase Times, but thisishorseracing.com. Some of the best writing, some of the best coverage that you're going to find anywhere for the game, not just over the hurdles either. Joe, thank you so much for this. Look forward to seeing you along, you know, down the road, as Proctor said.
Exactly. Thanks a lot for your time, and thanks for the compliments there. We're trying, you know, we just like to write about horses and tell horse stories. It doesn't necessarily matter whether they run over jumps or on the flat.
Not only should you be following Joe, but you could follow Saratoga Special and buy Sean Clancy, as well as Saratoga TL, which is Tom Law, the three-headed monster that is thisishorseracing.com. And they're doing just an unbelievable job. I would have called Sean, but he didn't win. If he had won a race, I would have called Sean. But I know he'd be kicking the cat and you know, and muttering under his breath. So I figured I better go with you.
You act like you know him. I'm impressed.
Well, he's the best. I love it. Joe, this was great. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you. We'll see you soon.
You bet. Joe Clancy, everybody, they're great. The Clancys and Tom Law, what they've accomplished with the Saratoga Special and with the website. We got a few minutes. Actually, we got a few minutes left, and too tight for some of the other potential visitors. So we'll be very satisfied with the lineup today with Brian Lynch and Kevin Humphreys. Kev Hum, Kevhum. If you haven't followed Kev yet already, we've already had a couple of emails and requests. Eric Hallstrom from Indiana and Joe Clancy, and a couple of things. We got 3-4 minutes. Let me get this update to you. I had tweeted and I discussed, probably about now. It's about 2 weeks ago, right? Yeah. The situation with Billy Turner, and Billy had a fall which resulted in a broken neck, and he had very involved surgery to repair his neck. And the good news is that the surgery went well. And he had been at, I've got to find out if he's come home. They were looking to make a decision about him either coming home for rehab or staying in this other facility. And I gave out an address a couple of weeks ago to, you know, to send some best wishes. At this point, a little bit more than best wishes are going to be necessary. And a GoFundMe has been established to help Billy Turner. And I'll send out the link for it. And very quickly, it's raised $10,000 in less than 24 hours. Is going to need some financial support because of the limits of the insurance coverage. And so whether your friend and an acquaintance and contemporary of Billy Turner's, or you're a horse player or a fan of the game that appreciates his incredible contribution to the sport's history, and whatever can be done to help here will be really appreciated. And we'll get an update and you know, probably talk to a couple of people as the week goes forward. But I'll send out the Twitter, on Twitter, I'll send out the address so you can, but if you have to, you know, if you want to go to GoFundMe and put in Billy Turner, the title includes Seattle Slough. Put in Billy Turner, Seattle Slough, and I'm sure it'll pop right up. But I'll put the link to the fund on both Twitter and Facebook. Okay, and we'll reiterate it as the week progresses. Pretty tough. We are looking forward, actually, to a visit, I think tomorrow or Wednesday. Not sure yet. I got to talk to the very lucky winner. And the winner and the specific of the mutual that I'm referring to was that second Canterbury pick five, the second day. A $56,264 hit. There were two winners. We're going to talk to one of them. And I'm looking forward to it because it was an impossible sequence. And so hopefully we'll unlock some of the secrets of cashing at Canterbury. Tomorrow, well, obviously we got Royal Ascot, which Keb will write up. And I'm going to look at some Indiana this week as well for their pick five. We have to go over the Gulfstream sequence from Saturday, the force out, and more. I got so much here. It's crazy. Let's put Royal Ascot over there. And I didn't give you, there was something else that we never got to today. There's a lot we didn't get to. Santa Anita. We got to talk about that. I want to talk about that Uncle Chuck. It's a very interesting pedigree story, I think, as well. Woodbine. Yeah, I mentioned Woodbine, right? Owlette, Freck Daddy for Wesley, and Ten Brock. Beat Kirkland's Voyage. That was in the Star Shoot. Trombetta for his wife. What a good husband. There's the Gulfstream. Took me too long to find it. So we'll save the Gulfstream Rainbow Six result for tomorrow. All right? And, you know, there were a couple of crazy, I thought there were a couple of crazy results, actually, of the way some races unfolded that I want to talk about. Actually, I'll save those. Were good. I'll save those for Andy anyway, because some of them were at Belmont. We had a good effort Saturday from Kid Chocolate. Ran well. Was pleased. Getting back going. Ran a career best. Good luck today if you're playing. Good luck to everybody in Indiana. Talk to you in the morning.
The latest racing news.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.